My sobriety date's January 5th, 1997. My group's a Baxter group, and I got a sponsor. His name's Walt. When I came here, I was told to go to meetings every night, and I'd go, and I'd sit, and I'd listen, and I'd think, you know, I'd be listening to you guys, and after a while, I'd be like, man, I really like what I'm hearing, and I want what you guys have, and I want to do that, and it sounded so cool, and I'd go home. My sponsor, he told me to call him every night, and I'd get home right after a meeting. I'd call this guy. He'd be like, did you go to a meeting? I'd be like, yeah. Did you sit up in front? Yeah. Did you listen to the lead? Yeah. What'd the guy say? And I'd be like, I can't remember, you know. I just couldn't remember nothing when I was new. But I remember a couple things, and the most basic thing I heard real early on was this one guy said that it's so simple what we do here. He said, you get a sobriety date, and you keep it. Like, just no matter what, just don't pick up that first drink, and you never have to change that sobriety date. Just get a sobriety date and keep it. You know? I mean, that's all we do here. It's so basic. One day at a time, we don't pick up the first drink. You know? And today, you know, I mean, today I want to keep my sobriety date. I did what I was supposed to do today. I don't know, man. There's a guy here from my neighborhood that I used to drink with. And when we were young, we had a lot of fun, you know. But I gotta tell you, at the end, it just wasn't fun no more. And I didn't want to live the life I was living. And there was nothing I could do about it. I just didn't think there was no way I could change it. I couldn't stop drinking, you know. I'm an alcoholic. I can't stop drinking. I can't stop drinking on my own. I just can't do it, you know. And that was so frustrating for me when my life was really just bad at the end, and everything was bad about it, and I didn't like it, and I didn't want to do it no more, and I just couldn't stop it. I just didn't think there was any other way, you know. I mean, it was like the only way I knew. And doggone it, you know, if I didn't end up here, and one day at a time, you know, I mean, it works. So, like, you guys that are new here tonight, just, like, stay here. Get a sobriety date and keep it, and, it really works. And my life's really good today. I grew up over here. I grew up down in Cleveland on East 71st Street, you know. And I had a mom and a dad, and I have two older brothers, and I have a twin sister. And so growing up, I didn't know it at the time, but I know what resentment is. You know, I always thought, like, this, my sister, like, she's the only girl. I always thought she got, like, better presents than me, you know, at Christmas and stuff. And I'd always be mad about that. You know, and she was always smarter. She got better grades. But, you know, she did her homework, you know, and I never did that either. And I had resentments as a kid. I had a guy talk a couple weeks ago at my home group, and he talked about how he learned to lie because he got away. He learned that if he lied, he could escape consequences. And when he said that, I thought to myself, you know, that's what I used to think too. You know, that's what I used to think when I was a kid. That when I lied, I got out of things and I escaped them. What I know today is that, you know, I didn't escape nothing. Because that stuff always stayed up there. It always stayed inside me. And so, like, the guilt of knowing that I lied, or like if I'd get caught later on, or if I'd have to lie later on to get out of the lie that I told. And at the end of my drinking, it was just lie all the time, you know. But I learned to do that when I was a kid, and I was scared. I just, fearful. When I didn't know something, I just hated looking stupid, you know. And I hated trying new things, and it just was, just had this, like, anxiety, anxious, kind of inside fear kind of thing going on, you know. And when I got to be about, I don't know, teen ads, I used to think it was like I was older, but the other day I thought about once when I was probably in fifth, sixth grade, seventh grade or something. And by then I already knew what alcohol could do to me, because we were at somebody's house after school, and there was a bottle there. We were getting into the guy's parents' liquor cabinet, and I drank a lot, and I got really drunk, and God, I couldn't have been, you know, how old is that? 11, 12, something like that. So by, like, that time already, I knew what alcohol could do for me, and I loved it. I loved what alcohol could do to me, and I was surrounded by people, like, my whole life growing up, my parents, the people in the neighborhood. I had good teachers, I had coaches, I was active in sports, I had all these people trying to teach me how to live life on life's terms, how to give me tools to live with. And, when I found alcohol, I just loved it. And like, who cared about having to learn all this other stuff? You know, it was a lot easier just to like put on a buzz and just forget about everything. And I learned that when I was a kid, and I loved it. I loved it. And I love the big book, in the big book, when Bill Wilson starts talking about when he started drinking, I think it's in Bill's story. He talks about like forming the habit, you know. And with me, the habit was formed when I was young. And I went on through life, you know. And as I went through high school, when I first got to high school, I was an honors student, and I was in, active in sports, like I said. And, you know, by the time I was getting out of high school, I wasn't an honors student. I wasn't playing like all the sports anymore. When I was in high school, my father passed away. He had been sick a long time. And I remember that. I was in the hospital when it happened, and my mom was by his bedside, and my sister and one of my brothers were by my mom's side, and I was over by the window, and I was thinking, you know, way to go, God. You know, some God you are. And what am I supposed to do now? And what about me? And in the big book, when it talks about alcoholism, and it says that self-centeredness and selfishness is the root of our problem. And when I look back at my life today, you know, I can see that when I was 16 years old already, you know, I was putting distance between me and my family, I was isolating myself, and it was all about me. You know, it was all about me. And it was like, you know, this is like a real tragedy for my family and for my mom and, you know, everyone else, but I just thought it was like some personal thing with God against me. And it's like it's not like I stopped believing in God or anything, but I just didn't think he would have anything to do with me, you know. I just didn't think I could ever have that, like a personal relationship with him, ever. And I go through life with that attitude, you know. It's all about me. I'm going to drink to get away from, to escape, you know. I'm going to, isolate myself from my family. And that's how my life went. I went away to college for a year, and I didn't do very good. I didn't, you know, I averaged. I partied a lot. I hung out with the people that partied. I ended up coming home. Boy, when I got back here, my friends were working from high school, and they all had stuff. So I got a job, and I went out, and I got a bunch of stuff. You know, I wanted what they had. They looked pretty happy. So I went out. I got a job. I got a car. I bought my first car, 1967 Ford Fairlane, really clean. I bought a Fender Stratocaster electric guitar, and I bought this black leather jacket with like all these zippers and studs and stuff. I was like an 18 years old, you know, little skinny little guy, and I was like, I have arrived, man. I was like so psyched, you know. I mean, this was going to be my year, you know, because now I'm all set up, you know. And I discovered all the bars down there, Fleet Avenue, Broadway, Polish Club. Used to just drink all the time. I worked second shift, 2 to 10:30, paradise. Get out at 10:30, I'd be in the bar by 11, close them up every night, you know. And I was like 19 years old. And I'm pretty lazy. I don't like working. So after about a year, I was working second shift, you know. But I'd go down to the Agora, and on Thursday night was college ID night, and I'd have to pay, I don't know, like $2 or something, $3 to get in, and like all these kids were getting in for free, so I went back to college so I could get an ID, and so I could get in for free, and I started going back to school, and I got laid off, and I liked that, and I went to school for a bunch of years, by in the 80s, you know, I mean, I had no direction in my life. I mean, I just didn't like to work, and that's why I went to school. I liked to drink a lot, you know, and so I could hang out in the bars all the time. And, I would go to spring break, and by this time my oldest brother lived in New Orleans, so I'd be going down there for Mardi Gras and, you know, Kentucky Derbies and just like wherever there was like some kind of party going on, that's where I would try to be, you know. And just no direction, no career kind of path, family, nothing. I just wanted a party, you know. ended up graduating and, like, you know, bouncing around. And I was in the bar one day, and my friend's older brother was there, and he asked me if I wanted to be an insurance underwriter. And I didn't even know what it was, but I asked him, like, what were the hours and what it paid. And it was, like, 9 to 5 working in an office Monday through Friday. I was like, fine, I'll do that. And so I get this job, and I got to dress up. And, you know, then I'm really thinking, now I've really arrived, you know. And I'd come into the bars down there on Fleet, and I'd be like, oh, get everybody a drink. You know, Diamond John's in the house. You know, get everyone. And, you know, like it says in the book, I made a host of fair weather friends. You know, I made a host of, I knew all kind of people. And it was just like always about the party for me. I ended up, after a few years, I got a little house down there in the neighborhood. You know, every now and then I could, kind of like, you know, save my money and you know, put together like a couple of good months and get a car or something. But for the most part, you know, I had a decent job and I'm living paycheck to paycheck all the time. This is why I asked them to be my sponsor, but I learned how to play utility roulette. And that's where you're paying the one that they're going to cut off that month, and you try to pay one a month and keep them all at the same time, you know. Started missing house payments right away. Started learning that it was kind of normal to live with, you know, 3 out of 4 utilities on. And that's how my life would go. And I was at this job for like 6.5 years. And in the big book, when it talks about the real alcoholic in there, and it describes them, and one of the things it says is that, you know, builds up a promising career for himself and his family, then pulls it down on his head in a series of senseless sprees. And after 6.5 years, I went from being an underwriter trainee to like handling the biggest accounts in this office for this company, and it was a really good job, and I had a really good job. And 6.5 years, I'm sitting across from my boss and his boss, and they got this file, and it's on me, and it's in black and white, and it's like all the days I missed, the times I called in sick, the times, you know, I called in to take a vacation day, all the work I missed. And I'm sitting across from them, and I'm thinking, like, you know, don't they know who they're talking to? You know, don't they know who I am? Don't they know I got potential, you know? And I always say that about the potential, because, like, when I came to AA, and I was here, like, a week, and I mean, at one of my first meetings, some guy gets up to make a comment, and he goes to the lead, he goes, potential? He goes, all that means is you haven't done shit yet. And when he said that, I was just like, ow. I was like, man, that's how I live my life, you know. I mean, that's what I would do is I would, you know, we talk about like the 3-inning ball player, and that would be me. I could come in and make a good impression and dress up and like look good for a little bit of time, but I could never sustain anything. I couldn't stay focused on anything. And it was only a matter of time before I was found out, you know. And then I'd have to lie. And then all that stuff would start building up inside, you know. Then I ended up quitting that job. And then I go through like a couple of jobs in a couple of years. And, by this time I got roommates coming in and out and, people coming in out of my house. And, you know, I mean, it was a mess. You know, there's like a path between like all the garbage from the back door to the front room, and like all the curtains are closed and everything. And just like garbage, newspapers, pizza boxes, beer cans, like everywhere, just everywhere. It was horrible. Couldn't let my friends come over anymore. Couldn't see my friends anymore, my family. Didn't want, you know, nothing to do with them. And I'd be trying to dress up and go to work, and, you know, I looked like heck. And I ended up with another job, and I was at this place for like 8 or 9 months. And, you know, I mean, even the bars were like cutting me off from my bar tabs and stuff. And, It was just horrible. It was this time of the year. It was this time of the year in 96, and I ended up at this place, and the same thing, you know, my boss, the director of human resources, they call me in, they got the file, it's on me. Same story, you know, every place I'd been in between there and then, missing days, not calling in, not showing up, look like heck. And this time these guys are like, we think you got a problem. And in my mind, I'm like, you know, I got a problem, and I know there's insurance, and I know I can get help, and all I got to do is say, yes, I got a problem, and I can get help. And they're like, well, what do you think? And I go, And I'm thinking, you know, I got a problem, I can get help, and they ask me, what do you think? And I open up my mouth, and what comes out is, I ain't got no problem, you guys are the problem. And if you'd only stay off my back or pay me more money, you know, then we wouldn't have any of these problems, we wouldn't have to be here, you know, let me get back and go to work. And they didn't believe me. And that made me, you know, I was pretty mad about that. They got me on a phone with a counselor at this, treatment center down the street, and after about 10 minutes, she's asking if I wanted to go to a hospital to get detoxed, you know. And I was like, I'm not that bad, you know. No, I don't need that. But they got me into an outpatient thing, an intensive outpatient treatment program, and it was 3 nights a week for 3 hours a night. And the first day I was there, they gave me a big book, they gave me a meeting schedule, they told me I'd have to go to meetings. I'd have to get phone numbers. I'd have to call somebody and get a sponsor. I'd have to go through that book and work the steps. I mean, the first 10 minutes I was in treatment, they laid it out for me exactly what I was going to have to do. And it turns out that's when I started doing that thing. I've been sober. But then they gave me these two pamphlets, one on alcoholism and one on cocaine addiction. And they said, go read these tonight. And I did that. And after I read those, I was like, well, shoot, I understand this so well. I mean, I got it now. I don't need to do any of that other stuff. And I didn't. I didn't do anything they said, you know. And on January 1st, when one of my friends called and said, come on, let's go out, let's get a couple of beers. And I said, oh, I can't, you know, I'm in treatment now. But okay, we'll just go for a couple of beers, you know. And I never read the book. You know, I never went to any meetings. I didn't know, you know, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about it. It talks about this phenomenon of craving that happens like when we put alcohol in our system. And it happens to me, and I didn't know nothing about it. Today I can look back and see it, like, perfectly. You know, I just went out for a couple of beers. And the next thing I know, it's, you know, once again, it's 3-4 in the morning. You know, I'm getting home. I'm trying to go to work. I got to go back to this group thing. And I don't say nothing because I'm scared, and I lie. And I don't want to get thrown out of that group. And right before they let us go home, we had to leave them a sample that they were going to test. And I went home. That was a Friday night, and I went home for the weekend thinking, you know, I'm busted. And the thing that was going through my head was that I was going to get thrown out of that group. They were going to fire me from work. You know, I had already filed bankruptcy to save, like, the house that I had. The house I got was built by my great-grandparents or grandparents or someone. It's been in my family forever. So I'm like, well, my family's not going to want anything to do with me, so they're going to toss me out. I'm going to have nowhere to go, and I'm going to be stuck all alone, and I'm not going to have nothing. And that's what I was thinking when I went home from that group that weekend. And I'm an alcoholic, and I'll tell you, it hurt, and I didn't like the way I felt, and I couldn't stop my mind from racing, just thinking and thinking, how am I going to get out of this, and what am I going to do, and what am I going to say, Now I'm an alcoholic, and I got no skills or tools or nothing to deal with this. I don't know how. I haven't been going to meetings. You know, I haven't been praying. I don't know nothing. And I do what I always do. I go out to get drunk, you know. And that last time I went out to get drunk, I couldn't stop it. I couldn't stop my mind. No matter how much I drank, no matter how much I used that night, that next day, I just could not stop that tape from playing over and over and over again, you know. And it was that, you know, the little prayer, God help me, you know. And I ended up staying sober for a day, and I went back to that meeting. And I didn't say nothing, and I lied, and they called me on it, and I lied. And the nice counselor is like, John, you're sugarcoating things. John, you're whitewashing things. Oh, John, you're lying, you know. And she's asking me why I did it. And meanwhile, the other counselor that was mean, because she was in AA, and she was sober for 10 years. She just celebrated 10 years. And she went to meetings, and she had a sponsor. You know, she worked the steps, and she's sitting off to the side. And we're in this, you know, in the group, in a circle, and right in the middle of it, she just, like, does this little sarcastic kind of laugh. And all she says is, your life's in shambles. And the way she said it was just, there was, like, no emotion to it. It was just, I don't know. What I heard was the truth, you know. What I heard was the truth. And in my mind, this little thought, like, shoots through there that says, everyone knows but you. And that hurt. And I didn't like to hear that. And I'll tell you, I know why today, because I read the book. And in the book it says that more than anything, the alcoholic loves to lead the double life. And I got to tell you, when I was at work and I'd be all dressed up in a suit and these people I'd be working with would be talking about their retirement plans and exercising and cholesterol and whatever, I'd be sitting there thinking, like, what a bunch of squares these people are. I got it going on because I can go out and run the streets all night and still make it to work, you know? And then I'd be out running the streets all night with these guys, and I'd be thinking, like, what a bunch of crumb bums. These guys don't even have jobs, you know? What am I doing with these guys, you know? And I'm always thinking, see? That's my problem. I'm always thinking, and I'm thinking I'm just getting over on all these people. And when that thought shot through my head that said everyone knows but you, and that was the truth, I was just like, man, that just deflated me, you know? I was crushing. And my sponsor says, you know, pride busting, ego deflating program. And that's what we do here, you know. And so I'm walking out of that meeting and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't stop. I can't stop drinking. And this girl that was sober and that was in that group, she's sober like 2 weeks. She goes, well, duh. You know, of course you can't stop. She goes, we stop. You know, we admitted we were powerless. It's a we thing. She goes, you got to come to a meeting with us. And I'm like, I can't. You know, my car's broke down. You know, it's just, you know, whiny. So whiny. And she's like, well, you made it here tonight, and just come here tomorrow. We're all going to a meeting. And I got there the next night, and all these people that were sober like a week or 2 weeks took me to a meeting. And we get to this meeting, and this guy gets up, and he's talking, and at one point he goes, you know, all my life it was like I was fighting. I was fighting everybody and everything. It was like I was swimming upstream, you know. And finally, I just got too tired. I just couldn't fight nothing no more, and I just had to throw up my hands and just go with that current and let that current take me, you know. And he goes, and that's like what it is with God's will. You just got to surrender and throw up your hands and just let the current take you, you know. And I identified with this guy. I identified with the part about being so tired. I just didn't want to fight nothing no more. I was like so tired. I was just like, whatever, you know. Whatever. And these guys that were sober, like a couple weeks, they start taking me to meetings. And they're walking around, and they got like little books. You know, they're getting phone numbers. I don't even have a book, you know. I got like a sheet of paper, and I'm just like shuffling along after them, like getting phone numbers, you know. And these counselors are on me. They're like, you got to get a sponsor. So I call this guy, you know, the guy who talked about the utility roulette thing, because I identified with that. And I'm like, you know, the counselors say I need a sponsor. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And he's like, well, it's like, go to a meeting every day, call me every night, and we'll see how it goes, you know. He goes, but write this down. He says, it says in the big book and how it works. It says, when you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And he goes, what do we have that you want, that you'd be willing to go to any length to get? And as soon as he says that, I just go, a big screen TV. And he goes, what? And I go, man, I was at this meeting last night, and this guy, he said he got a big screen TV because he's sober. I'm like, that's what I want. And he's like, dude, man, he's like, just write it down and, like, put it in your wallet, you know. He's like, and just, you know, just think about these things. And so that's what I did, and I started going to meetings, you know. And I started going to meetings, like, every day. And he'd always, like, be on me. He'd be like, you got to sit in the front row. He's like, you're never going to pay attention for an hour anyway, but if you're in the front row, you'll be facing the right direction when you come to, you know. And I'd get all mad. And he'd always be trying to give me, I'd say something, and he'd be like, get, you know, go back out, finish the job, come back when you're serious. And I'd get so mad at this guy. I'd see him out at this meeting, and I still see him, it's tonight. So I won't see him tonight, but on Saturdays I see him, and still, I'd drive out, it's out in Willoughby, and I'd be driving home, and I'd be so mad at this guy. I'd be so mad at him, and I'd be like, that's it. You know, I'm going to stay sober just to come back. He doesn't think I'm going to stay sober. I'd be like thinking, I cannot believe this guy that he doesn't think I'm serious, you know. I'm serious. I'm staying here. That's it. And I'd get so mad at that guy. You know, and one day I was walking home from a meeting, and it was cold, so it still had to be pretty early because I got sober in January. It was still snowing and cold. And what I was thinking, what shot through my head was my mom, and this was right before my father passed away, and she was yelling at me for, she had taken me aside, and she's like, you know, all he does is worry about you, and he's really sick, you know. And what I thought about was that what a horrible son I was, because, you know, 20 years later, you know, there's this restless spirit up there that still has to worry about his 36-year-old son, you know, and, And I was thinking about my mom, and, you know, she was up in her upper 70s at the time, and I'm thinking, like, she's got to worry about me, too, and that ain't right, you know. And I was thinking about, like, God, what a horrible son I was. But I had gone to a couple meetings that day, and at the one, the guy was talking about sharing his story, and he tried to commit suicide at one point, and he called his mom, and she said, "You're in God's hands now," and she hung up the phone. And then after being sober for 5 years, he graduated from college, and his mom and dad were in the front row, and they were really proud of him, you know. And I thought about the lady I heard had just came from the lead, and she was talking about her parents, and they had been sick, and how her brother was there trying to take care of them, and he's running around, rushing around, trying to get them stuff, and, you know, "Can I get you anything?" And they're like, "No, it's okay, because Penny's here now." And the thought that came to me was that, you know, what you guys had was that you guys knew how to be good sons and good daughters, you know, and good, you know, brothers and sisters and stuff like that. So you guys knew how to do that, and I didn't. You know, some guy got up here when I was new, and he said, "You can't think your way into a new way of acting, but you can act your way into a new way of thinking." And I had to do these things, and I had to watch you guys. And I thought, you know, when I heard that, I thought, okay, I can do that. You know, I can do that. And I would try to do that, but I couldn't do it because I didn't know how to be like a good son was, you know. And I had to come here to watch you guys to see how you guys did it, so then I could copy you guys and do what you guys did, you know. And that's what I do today. You know, I don't drink and I go to meetings. You know, I heard this lady get up once when I was really new, and she was sober a long time, and she goes, "Yeah, I read my 24-hour book 3 times, third time out loud every morning. Did it when I was new, still do it today." And I started, and I had, somebody had given me a 24-hour book, so I started reading it every morning, 3 times, third time out loud. And somebody said, "You got to get on your knees and pray and ask God to keep you sober in the morning and do it again at night." And I always forget when I was new that I was supposed to do that. And, you know, I'd be laying in bed, it'd be nice and warm. I'd be like, "Oh yeah, I gotta pray." And I'd start praying. And then I'd be like, "Oh wait, I'm supposed to be on my knees and I have to get out of bed and get down there and do it." But, you know, after about a week or so, this one day, I just felt something inside, and it wasn't like I was gonna get sick or have the dry heaves or anything. It was like, after a while, I was like, "That feels good." You know, and I felt good doing it. And I think for me that's really significant, because the first time I really felt good in AA, you know, I didn't know what good was. I couldn't identify with the feeling, you know. I didn't know what it was. But I liked it. I knew that. I like feeling good. I like it today. And that's why I try to live my life like you guys taught me, so I can feel good. You know, all the stuff I did, there's like new people here tonight. You know, there's like some effort and some work involved, working the steps, you know, calling a sponsor. My sponsor, he told me to call him every night. You know, I didn't just pick up the phone and call some strange guy that I didn't know and said, you know, "Hi, my name's John, I want to talk about my feelings," you know. I mean, I didn't do that. I mean, I called this guy every day for a year and talked about sports or the Browns or whatever, you know. I mean, it took a long time for me, but I did what I was told, you know. I didn't want to go back. Get a sobriety date and keep it. You know, I wanted to stay here. And I'll tell you, after about a year and a half, when I was like really hurting one day, before I knew anything, I was on the phone talking to this guy. I don't know how it happened, because I knew how to dial his number. I just picked up the phone and called him, because it's what you guys told me to do. And it's a lot of work, but it's worth it. It's worth it, because today my life is like really good. Like, my life is, like, really good. I just can't. And I love getting up here and talking, because it's like, you know, if you catch me, like, you know, 3 in the afternoon when I'm at work and my boss is yelling at me, I may not say my life is really good, you know. But, like, when I think about it and when I get to share about it, it's like my life is good today. You know, my neighbors don't call the cops on me no more. My family, they want me around. You know, work doesn't want to fire me. I got a dog. I mean, it's like, man, I got a good life today. A good, solid, clean life, you know. And it's a lot of fun. I have great fun here in AA, you know, with my friends. We go to conferences, you know, go to Founders Day, go to meetings. Man, I don't know. It's just really good. I highly recommend it to anybody that's new. It's like, stay here. Stay here. And don't don't give up when it seems really bad, because like the really worst time is like early sobriety. When I stopped drinking, I was telling this guy before the meeting, when I stopped and I got sober and then I could look around and see what a mess I had made of my life, I mean, it was really bad. That was like the worst time, you know. But I had stopped doing like stuff to add to the bad side, and little by little, it gets cleaned up, and really, like little by little, you know, it just takes time. But I heard somebody say, or I read it in a book or something, you know, if you give up, you never know how close you were to like where it was going to happen for you. You know, you never know if it was like the next meeting, the next handshake, the next time you pick up an ashtray, the next anything. You know? And I mean, if you give up, I mean, you just never know if like that next moment was going to be like the one that's just going to like shoot you over the edge and make your life really good. I was at a meeting not too long ago. Some guy said a prayer. I don't know how it goes exactly, but I thought it was really cool. And he said, you know, God, you've given me so many things. If you could give me one thing more, just give me a grateful heart, you know. And I thought that was such a cool prayer, because that is such a cool thing for me to pray for today. And I just really like want to have a grateful heart and want to thank you guys for being here. Bob, thanks for asking me to talk. You guys, thanks for being here when I got here. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer.